From WGCU, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Between 2016 and 2018, the rate of uninsured children across the country increased from 4.7% to 5.2%. That's an increase of more than 400,000 uninsured children. That's according to the Georgetown University Center for Children and Families' newly released 9th Annual Report on Uninsured Children in the U.S. According to the report, Florida is among states that have experienced the sharpest increases in uninsured kids. The report points to a number of policy changes under the Trump administration as reasons for this decline. We're taking a closer look at the report's findings and what they could signal going forward with Joan Alker. She's executive director of the Georgetown University Center for Children and Families and a research professor with the McCourt School of Public Policy. Joan Alker, I wish we were talking under different circumstances, but it's always great to connect with you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
Listeners can weigh in on today's Gulf Coast Live conversation online. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Before we get into the specific findings of this report, let's take a step back at the 10,000-foot view for some perspective here. For decades, the rate of uninsured children in the U.S. had been on a positive decline. To what can we attribute this longstanding positive trend, and when did we start to see the rates of uninsured kids begin to grow?
Yeah, that's a great point. So this is the 9th year that I've written this report. And until the last 2 years, it was always a good news report. But the trajectory of improvement in children's coverage has actually been going on for a couple of decades in the United States. It started with Medicaid expansion in the 90s, followed by the passage of the Children's Health Insurance Program in 1997. And so for many, many years, the country was making progress. And actually for children, most of this progress predated the Affordable Care Act. But the Affordable Care Act was essentially the cherry on top of the sundae for kids coverage and brought down the lowest uninsured rate for kids that we have seen in 2016 at 4.7%. So it was really Medicaid and CHIP working together. And I would also say there was a really strong bipartisan commitment to get this done around the country. And that's unfortunately has been eroded, it appears, today.
All right, we're going to get into the ACA a little bit later in the conversation, but let's talk about the Children's Health Insurance Program and I guess how support for that has waned a little bit. I remember we had talked back in 2017 about the impacts of Congress missing a deadline to reauthorize funding for the CHIP program. And by the way, Florida has the fourth largest CHIP program in the country. And how that funding uncertainty was kind of throwing state agencies that administer CHIP coverage into chaos a bit. You know, they needed to notify families if they were going to lose their coverage. But for a while there, they really didn't know from month to month whether they'd have the funds to continue providing coverage. Can you kind of review that situation and tell us, I guess, what the status of CHIP funding is now and maybe how that's contributed to some of the data in this newest report?
Yeah, that's a great point. So the data here is really looking at what happened in 2017 and 2018. And when we think back to that time, families were hearing constantly that coverage was going away. First, in 2017, Congress spent much of the year trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act and cut Medicaid. So, of course, ultimately, we all know they failed. But those were that was the news families was getting. And then Congress moved right into a period where they did not, they kept kicking the can down the road on extending the CHIP program. So ultimately, CHIP was extended for 10 years, and that's great news. But there was a lot of confusion, I think, among families. And the delay actually caused us to miss a year of back-to-school outreach grants that the CHIP program offers in 2018. So just at a time when families were hearing that coverage might be going away, and there are other issues happening like the chilling effect, which we'll probably talk about in a minute, the assistance for families on the ground was being cut. Between cuts to the Affordable Care Act outreach and enrollment programs, as well as this delay in the CHIP outreach grants, the community-based resources, and this is certainly true in Florida, were being cut.
Let's talk about this chilling effect then, since you just brought that up. And by that, I'm thinking of Trump's anti-immigrant sentiment, which has been prevalent in his statements going all the way back to that very first speech when he announced he was running for president. How do you see this climate of fear impacting whether or not immigrant families would risk enrolling their eligible children in CHIP or Medicaid?
Yeah, that's right. An important point to be aware of right up front is that the majority of uninsured children, about 60%, are eligible for Medicaid or CHIP, but they're not currently enrolled. And when we see where losses of coverage are occurring, they were most pronounced for both white children and Latino children. We know from a lot of reports around the country, now that we're seeing this sharp increase in the number of Latino children, these children are primarily citizens, but their parents are immigrants. And because of some proposed regulations the Trump administration has put out called a public charge, and the general climate of fear that's been created for families, even though there should not be any negative consequences for them to sign their citizen children up for Medicaid, they're scared. And we heard about this just the other day with one of our colleagues in Florida talking about a family immigrant students who were here and had a baby, and they were too scared to enroll their baby in CHIP. And the baby got sick, so they came back and realized they needed to do it. But they're worried that they might get deported. They might have trouble adjusting their immigration status. So we are definitely now seeing this chilling effect resulting in increases in citizen children who are Latino being uninsured.
I wanted to go back for a moment to the Trump administration's efforts to weaken and failed efforts to eliminate the Affordable Care Act. How does that contribute to this decline, as you've seen?
Yeah, so again, I think there's two issues going on here. One is the very explicit efforts to undermine the ACA and sort of whittle away at features of it in the marketplace, for example. For kids, the marketplace is not a huge issue, but what we do see is that some children have lost coverage in the marketplace. And that is an issue in a state like Florida because your CHIP eligibility is relatively low, not a very generous state. So those kids who are in working families above where your CHIP eligibility is may not be able to get coverage through the marketplace, and there's complicated reasons for that. But the other issue that I think is very startling is that, you know, we're doing pretty well right now in the economy. The unemployment rate is low. And so this is a time when you would expect the child uninsured rate to go down. So what's particularly troubling about these findings is that when a recession occurs, this child uninsured rate is likely to increase much more rapidly.
Gotcha. Just more broadly, I mean, when it comes to these efforts to weaken the Affordable Care Act itself, does that kind of leave you somewhat scratching your head in the sense that, you know, we know premiums for plans offered through the federal marketplace have been declining, indicating that the health insurance plans through the ACA market are actually stabilizing. And even in the face of severe federal funding cuts for ACA Navigator programs that help sign people up for plans, Florida has still been leading the nation in enrollment among states that didn't expand their Medicaid programs. It seems like the data demonstrably shows that the Affordable Care Act is working, even in spite of these ongoing efforts to weaken it.
That's absolutely true. The marketplace has proven extremely resilient and is a very important source of coverage in Florida. But that is actually serving, generally speaking, more adults than kids. The hostility that Florida itself has shown to the ACA is really manifested in the lack of Medicaid expansion for parents and other low-wage workers, under 130% of the poverty line. What we found in this data is that states that haven't expanded Medicaid under the ACA have seen three times as large an increase in the rate of uninsured children as states that have expanded. And Florida falls right into this bucket. Florida, unfortunately, now ranks 45 in the country. Your uninsured rate went up to 7.6%. That was an increase of over 50,000 kids becoming uninsured in Florida. And the reason this is that when you cover parents, and should Florida adopt the Medicaid expansion, many of these kids' parents would be covered. And there will be a lot of outreach, there'll be a lot of attention, a lot of media focus on how there was a new coverage source available. And that would result in more children whose parents are currently unaware that they're eligible for Medicaid, or may have had trouble with the paperwork, perhaps had their kids dropped off coverage, they don't even realize it. Those kind of interactions would help to drive down the child uninsured rate as well.
I've been covering the Florida legislature for more than a decade now, and while I don't have a crystal ball, I would be absolutely floored if state lawmakers here in Florida actually ever decided to expand the Medicaid program. So just, you know, given that and given the fact that state lawmakers here in Florida are going to be convening their 2020 state legislative session in January, they're already hard at work for that. What would you like for them to see in this report, or how would you like them to use this data as they prepare to craft the state budget going into 2020?
Well, that's a great question, and there are many things states can do. I mean, even though we have these prevailing sort of negative national trends occurring, states absolutely can make this problem better. One of the causal factors we haven't talked about is what we're seeing is an increase in red tape. We're seeing sort of subtle and not so subtle cues from the Trump administration to states that they need to crack down on their eligibility process and ask families to verify their income more frequently, take a more aggressive approach. And as a result, nationwide, over a million children have lost Medicaid, and most of those children are eligible and should be on Medicaid. So this growth in red tape is a real issue. Now, for a state like Florida, you have a very complicated set of children's health programs. So there are a lot of things the state could do to simplify and streamline its process. The other point I wanted to make is that Florida has a very stingy program for kids in terms of your income eligibility level. And what we saw was that families whose income is roughly $30,000 to $53,000 dollars a year saw the biggest increase in their rate of uninsured children. Now, in the country nationwide, the average coverage levels for CHIP are that upper income I just talked about, around $53,000 a year, 250% of the poverty. Florida only covers kids up to just over 200% of poverty. So Florida could certainly expand its children's coverage, which is a separate issue from expanding Medicaid for their parents. And they could simplify and streamline their programs, and that would definitely help.
Now, Florida, I know, has a managed plan for Medicaid. Is that part of the issue when you're talking about this red tape, or is that just how they choose to administer it?
Yeah, that's not so much of the issue. I mean, that raises other issues once kids get into the program, but that's not really an issue. What is an issue is that Florida has relatively high premiums for your CHIP program, and you also have a waiting period, which is essentially a fixed period that children have to be uninsured before they can get on. So those are the kinds of policies that Florida could change to make their program more family-friendly.
The report notes that, you know, Florida is among 15 states with statistically significant increases in the number or rate of uninsured kids. Also among the top 7 states when it comes to experiencing the sharpest increases in uninsured kids. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you have North Dakota, the only state that actually saw progress between 2016 and 2018 in reducing its rate of uninsured kids. What could Florida learn from maybe not just North Dakota, but maybe even other states that didn't experience such of severe declines?
Yeah, North Dakota is a little bit of a mystery, and I'll say they still have a pretty high uninsured rate. So it is easier to bring it down if you have a high one. But I will say that, you know, here in D.C., actually, we have one of the best coverage rates in the country. Over 98% of our children are covered. And the rules in D.C., first of all, they cover children higher up on the income scale, which we just talked about. Florida is not very generous in that regard. All children are covered regardless of immigration status, and that's a very small number of kids who are undocumented. It's very surprisingly small, but that creates a welcoming climate that families know that their kids can get covered pretty much regardless. And I think you know, more broadly as a country, we're really searching for new ideas, fresh ideas. I think voters on all sides of the political spectrum feel that way. And one of the ideas that we've been kicking around here is that it would be great if a state would just enroll babies who are born in hospitals in the state, give them continuous coverage till they're age five, till they go to school, so that parents really don't have to worry about all of these applications and renewals and red tape. They can focus on maximizing their child's healthy development and growth.
Yeah, it was interesting to me looking at some of the demographic breakdowns. And when it comes to some groups, like ethnic groups or socioeconomic groups, that information wasn't so surprising to me. What kind of left me scratching my head was why young children under six seem to be so highly represented in this group of uninsured but eligible kids. What do you think accounts for that?
Yeah, that is a really serious issue, and we're going to actually do a follow-up paper looking specifically at that. Children, their coverage rates are very inversely correlated with age. In other words, teenagers have the highest uninsured rates and babies have the lowest uninsured rates. And that's because, you know, babies and toddlers are at the doctors all the time. They're interacting with the healthcare system on a much more regular basis than teenagers. And they need to be because, as we all know, you know, infants and toddlers need to get their immunizations. They need to get their well-child checkups. And so the fact that we see an increase for children under age six, you know, they still have better coverage rates than older children. But unfortunately, they're now catching up to the national average. And I think the reasons for that, of course, we can't precisely attribute what the reasons are, but I think they're the same kinds of reasons we've been talking about. There's a chilling effect for Latino families, and there's this increase in red tape. And I know, again, talking to somebody in Florida the other day who works with these families, mentioned a case where they had a recently divorced parent trying to get into the Healthy Kids program, and they were asking to discount the alimony. I mean, the way they treated the alimony was different in both programs, so they kept getting bounced back and forth between the programs, and as a result, their child was uninsured for months. So these kinds of red tape barriers, and really what I would say is that the welcome mat for coverage has been withdrawn. We used to have a very, I think, across the country, and some places were better than others, and Florida's never been a leader, but Florida, like everywhere else, was getting better. For many, many years, your coverage rate for kids has been going up. So it's especially troubling to see these kinds of backward movement for these very young children. And so that's something I think the state really needs to keep a very close eye on.
Yeah, I was interested to see that the percentage of children who have coverage through Medicaid or CHIP actually exceeds the percentage of children, and this is Florida specific, I don't know how widespread this is, who have coverage through an employer-sponsored health plan. I mean, is it possible to understate the importance of CHIP and Medicaid programs when it comes to healthcare access for kids?
No, it really isn't. I mean, the Medicaid program in particular is really the ballgame for kids. Nationwide, just over a third of children get their coverage now through Medicaid or CHIP. The vast majority of those kids are getting it through Medicaid. Employer-sponsored coverage is still the number one source nationwide of coverage for children. It's about 47%. But you have states like Florida where the kinds of jobs that exist in your tourism economy, in your service sector economy, they are not providing great coverage to their employees, much less their employees' dependents. And that's why it's so critical that our public coverage sources for kids, Medicaid, CHIP, and to a lesser extent, the marketplace, but Medicaid and CHIP really have to be there because, you know, employer coverage for family members is getting more and more expensive every year. It's really out of reach for low and moderate wage families to get that coverage for their kids.
Right, right. And I guess before we end the conversation, I wanted to note that this version of the report seems particularly user-friendly with this new online interactive data hub. Tell me about the features there, because I've really been enjoying looking at, you know, state-by-state comparisons, and it's just real easy to use. I like it.
Yes, yes. Well, many of my colleagues who are much more talented at this sort of thing than I have been working for many months to develop. We have a new interactive data hub. Please come check it out. Our website is ccf.georgetown.edu, and you'll see the link to the paper right there and in the interactive data hub. And you can go, you can compare not only the uninsured rates for kids in your state, but also some of the demographics and a lot of the policy choices that your state has made or not made that would help address this problem. Also, we have some quality of care indicators. That's where the managed care issue comes in, to see what's going on with the provision of care. Are kids getting access to the kinds of services they need? So we hope to build on this interactive data hub, and we'd love for people to use it, give us feedback on what could be added to it. We're very excited about it.
All right. And I wanted to go back and ask about something we'd talked about towards the beginning of the conversation. When it comes to those issues we were having in 2017 with uncertainty over the future of funding for the CHIP program, has that been resolved? Is there going to be funding for that program, you know, prudently well into the future?
Yes. Fortunately, when Congress did extend the CHIP program, they extended it for 10 years. So that is good news, not something we have to worry about. What the state can really focus on now, because there is that certainty of funding, is really improving their program, perhaps expanding their income eligibility for CHIP, because Florida is really lagging behind the nation there, because we know the funding will be there for the foreseeable future.
Last question here. Do Florida or other states, do you think, put enough resources toward just community outreach? Because since, you know, most of these kids we're talking about are kids who are eligible and just aren't enrolled.
Exactly right. No, they don't. And this is where the cuts in funding to the Affordable Care Act outreach, Florida had a lot of community-based navigators, they're called, which this was not exclusively focused on kids. This is a broader effort. But given all of the confusion, both with respect to immigration policy and Florida's complex set of public coverage programs for kids, it would be extremely helpful. You know, when we did our press call on this the other day, we had a couple of community-based enrollment workers who work in Jacksonville at the Children's Hospital there. And they are doing a wonderful job of working with families who are encountering these kinds of barriers, but they can only do so much. There are a lot of kids. There are 339,000 uninsured kids in Florida. So there are a lot of children that could really benefit from having more community-based outreach, bilingual outreach workers, et cetera.
All right. Well, Joan Alker with the Georgetown University Center for Children and Families and the McCourt School of Public Policy, thank you so much for your time and for helping us break down this data.
Thanks so much for having me. Always a pleasure.
That's all the time we have for today's show. You can find a link to the full report we've been discussing from the Georgetown University Center for Children and Families and the new interactive data hub with Florida-specific information at our website, gulfcoastlive.org. You can also go there if you missed any portion of the conversation or to hear any of our episodes in full. Or you can subscribe to the Gulf Coast Live podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Our show today was produced by myself. Our director is Richard Cinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.